This is the Lindell Report, bringing you news combined with hope by offering practical and achievable action points to assist you in defending and preserving faith and freedoms. And now, here is your host, Mike Lindell.
All right, welcome to the broadcast. Glad you're with us. Brandon House in for Mike Lindell, who is traveling to speak at an event tonight. We're going to have a full broadcast tonight. We're going to be joined by Colonel John Mills on a very important topic first, and then we're going to go to Dan and Steve with Precinct Strategy, and then Bill Federer, historian Bill Federer. He wants to give some historical context to what they just did to Mike Lindell, blocking him in up against a Hardee's drive-in wall with three cars and then seizing his phone. There are some historical analysis that needs to be brought to the table in regards to what it is they're doing. Because I keep getting that question. What are they doing? Why are they doing this? What is the goal of the FBI leadership? Why are they doing this? We'll bring some historical perspective to you tonight. But first joining me is Colonel John Mills. Many of you have seen the fact that it looks like Twitter was infiltrated by a foreign enemy, but I'm not so sure they cared. Oh, by the way, you like our new stone wall tonight? Look at that. That just came in, and Logan and the team got that installed today. That is a real stone wall. So they were busy today. Doesn't that look sharp? Woo-wee. And look who's laying on her MyPillow pet bed. Today is her birthday. We're going to have a birthday party during Brandon House Live tonight. No joke. We got a birthday cake, a dog birthday cake. We got presents. It's Delta's birthday. Little does she know what's coming as she sleeps on her MyPillow pet bed there next to the desk and the new stone wall. Look at that. Happy birthday, Delta Dawn. That is her middle name, Delta Dawn. Thank you, Jill, for the graphics. So we'll have a birthday party for her tonight during Brandon House Live. So a lot to look forward to tonight. We have breaking news as well, by the way, and that breaking news will come inside of Brandon House Live with the first interview. I asked him, am I going to get the first interview? He said, yes. I said, don't you dare go on another show. So he's going to be coming on my show, Brandon House Live, here on Lindell TV tonight, and that is Doug Frank. You remember the other day, Mike said that the FBI guys kept asking him about Doug Frank. Where did you meet Doug Frank? You know, in Brandon's studio. Oh, thanks. Yeah, okay. You can leave me out of it. But anyway, they kept bringing up Doug Frank. Well, I called Doug this morning on a totally different, unrelated topic. And it went right to voicemail. I thought, well, that's odd. Well, maybe he's on a plane. Come to find out, nope, he wasn't on a plane. The reason his phone went to voicemail is because he didn't have a phone. The FBI greeted him at the airport last night as he got off a plane and took his phone. So you'll hear about Doug Frank's conversation with them. He said it lasted about 20 minutes. It would have been a much shorter conversation, but apparently Doug Frank was educating them on, what he does. And they seemed completely unaware. They didn't understand what the case was. They were just doing their job out of the Cincinnati office. And so he got a chance to educate them on what it was this was all about. So Doug kept the conversation going, apparently, about 20 minutes. So Doug Frank will be with us tonight to share with us during my show, Brandon House Live, at 8:30 Central Time about that. Okay, now let's go to Colonel John Mills. Colonel Mills, welcome back to Lindell TV, the Lindell Report, and appreciate your being with us.
Hey, Brandon, always an honor to be with you and Mike and everybody at Frank's speech and on all your shows. Thank you so much.
Well, and you might want to back up your cell phone just in case you're next.
Back up? Well, yeah, they're going to have a heck of a time with my flip phone, I can tell you that.
Are you serious? You have a flip phone?
Yeah.
Is that because you as a guy that served on the National Security Council for two presidents, the National Security team for two presidents, is that because you understand that everything that's being seen and grabbed off your phone? Because I know another guy like you that goes he will only use a flip phone as well.
Keep everything as simple as possible.
Well, there you go. All right. Well, not too much to back up then. Well, let's talk. What's going on tonight with Twitter?
This one really upsets me, especially when we all intelligence community and law enforcement are based on essentially cases. That's how they report their costing to Congress. So Crossfire Hurricane, which I was in the middle of and realizing there was a coup going on, that's a named operation. Okay, and they do that. One of the reasons is so they can give proper cost accounting to a congressional oversight. So I'd like to know what the name of this named operation is for sure. I really want to know. But for, so with Twitter, we should be apportioning the basic job of the FBI is to essentially interdict, nullify, stop, arrest foreign intelligence. So Mudge Zatko, who gave congressional testimony 2 days ago, and it kind of went right over everybody's head. He said that there was at least one, and whenever there's one, there's more than one, Chinese intelligence officer inside of Twitter. Now, you gotta realize Twitter is essentially an internet service provider, meaning they have broad visibility into network traffic way beyond what an average or just an individual user or many of these companies would normally have. This would give them, a Chinese intelligence officer would give them great insight down to the individual user level of everything. So they could go after Falun Gong, they could go after Christians, they could go after anybody who says anything bad about China. And this is called intelligence preparation of the battlefield.
That last sentence, that is really, really important.
Yeah. Well, that's what you do when you're preparing for conflict. Intelligence preparation of the battlefield and operational preparation of the battlefield.
All right, let's talk about those two points. Repeat them again and explain both of them.
Well, intelligence preparation of the battlefield is essentially when you're assessing the other side in preparation for conflict. And so you're doing an intelligence assessment of the other side. Operational preparation of the battlefield is you're starting to do things that prep for this. In the Joint Staff, we call them six phases of conflict. I think I might be a little out of date in my joint doctrine. The six phases of conflict. Phase zero is shaping. And that's where you kick out your advanced force elements to start shaping the environment, doing all kinds of interesting things. So the FBI, instead of attacking Mike Lindell, they should be apportioning in a named, they should be totally focusing. This is a national crisis that we are allowing a foreign intelligence officer into critical infrastructure. And the same, well, the FBI is chasing down Dr. Franks and taking his cell phone away from him. This is ridiculous. The Chinese, this is shameful. We are allowing foreign intelligence on our turf to operate inside our networks. And I hope it totally crashes the Twitter price so that somebody can move in and just totally buy them out. Their share price should crater because they knew it, they didn't care, and they are an untrustworthy. And hey, guess what? The administration, you know, we know is secretly coordinating. There's actually an office at Twitter that is actually the access point so the administration can make all their requests known to the people who are complaining on Twitter. That means that the administration is using Twitter to coordinate with foreign intelligence. I mean, come on, you got members of the administration meeting with Twitter, and Twitter has foreign intelligence inside their offices. Shameful insanity. So they need to, their share price needs to crash so somebody can buy them up and take over. But this, you know, I helped reestablish the DOD relationship with Silicon Valley back in 2005, 2006. And I can't believe it has come to this.
So is there anything criminal there? If they know that a foreign adversary is in our systems doing this, they do nothing about it. Is there anything criminal from a federal national security standpoint?
Yeah, well, I mean, let's just face it. Twitter is critical infrastructure, and DHS, CISA organization, which says most secure election ever, is responsible for this critical infrastructure. This means, multiple violations of 18 U.S. code, allowing a foreign threat intelligence into critical infrastructure, our network environments.
So if we're to believe Twitter And there is reason to, I mean, this is highly documented, correct?
Yes. Okay. Well, Mudge Zatko is well respected in the cyber community.
Okay.
And if he says it, and there's always been these rumors of it, and not only China, but I mean, I'll name some others, Saudi Arabia, India. Come on, Twitter is a Disneyland of foreign intelligence activity.
How do you think they get in there? Do you think they buy stock and that gets them a cubicle at Twitter?
They apply for a job, and Twitter looks over their resume and says, "Yeah, sure, we want you on board. We'll put you over here on our customer relations team. We'll put you over here on our net flow analysis team. We'll put you over here in our content analysis team." Yeah, they apply for a job.
But do you think it's more nefarious than that? Do you think that they're Saudis buying up enough stock or offering money in other business deals so that they can move their guy and guarantee him a position and one that actually gets them access to critical information?
I wouldn't be surprised if that's part of it also. I mean, Twitter doesn't care because they are globalists. The idea of a nation state is only for the little people, and they don't care. They don't care about America. They don't care about their fellow citizens. They don't care. So a foreign intelligence works in their company. They don't care because they don't believe in America.
Yes.
So they are a criminal organization in violation of many elements of 18 U.S. code, and they need to be taken out and taken down.
Let's talk about the report today that Xi Jinping, I guess he's finally left the country for the first time since the COVID crisis, and he met with Putin. And what are they agreeing to do together?
Well, I mean, in advance, I always watch the South China Morning Post, a former Murdoch paper out of Hong Kong, which has been taken over. But that's, they always telegraph their messages through the South China Morning Post. And even a couple of days ago, they said right up front, the whole purpose of the meeting was to establish a new world order. Translated, that means put America out of business. Job one is to remove the dollar as the world's reserve currency, because life is always better when your monetary note is the reserve currency. That everything is better for you. You get better interest rates, better terms and conditions. They hate having to live under the dollar, having to put their transactions in dollars. They say they're going to start doing oil transactions between Russia and China it was unclear whether it was the Russian or the Chinese currency, but that's they met to topple the next step. Remember last fall they met in the preparation for the invasion of the Ukraine, and Putin. I wasn't in the meetings, but looking at all the sources, Putin essentially said, "I'm gonna deliver Ukraine in 72 hours. Watch me." Well, how's that working out 9 months later? It's a disaster, and the Russians are essentially in retreat. I'm not, people are saying, yeah, Zelensky's a world economic forum person. They're corrupt. Yeah, all those things may be true, but the Russians are not nice in this, and the Russians, we should not be cheering the Russians on in any way, shape, or form. The Russians are really in retreat, but this questions the essentially agreements made last fall where Putin says, "I deliver the Ukraine, then you can move on Taiwan." So now they're meeting whenever it's always dicey when a dictator leaves their country, and Putin has left Russia to go to Uzbekistan. Xi has left China to go to Uzbekistan, which is a obscure large country above of Afghanistan. And so they're meeting now essentially to plot the next steps. And Putin is trying to explain what a disaster it's been for almost a year and his failure to deliver the Ukraine. But believe me, they are their job one is to take out America one way or another. And
one way they're doing that, of course, is economic war. I mean, you're talking about them using either the ruble or the yuan for getting countries to buy oil on the world market from Russia, or Saudi Arabia even using I think at one point also the ruble to purchase some fuel from Russia. This is all to get rid of the global world reserve currency of the U.S. dollar, which is,
absolutely,
again, I'll make sure our audience understands that when Nixon closed the gold window in 1971, he talked Saudi Arabia into trading on the oil market with the U.S. dollar. So that becomes the global petro currency, the dollar. So these countries have to hold our currency, the U.S. dollar, to trade for oil. And in return, we have traditionally given Saudi Arabia protection. Now, what's really interesting is last year we began to report to you that and show you the satellite photos of the Patriot missiles that were in Saudi Arabia, our Patriot missiles in Saudi Arabia to protect Saudi Arabia, because that's a part of the deal. You trade oil in the world market, we'll give you security. Well, then Biden pulls the Patriot missiles out. We can show you before and after satellite photos, and we have. Who rushes in and signs a contract to protect Saudi Arabia? Russia. So yeah, we're in a massive economic war. And again, the average American, if they're not watching Lindell TV, if they're not watching my show and a few others, they have no clue all the various wars, from border war to drug war to currency war to election cybercrime wars. They have no idea the multiple wars that are going on, psychological operations. They have no clue, do they?
Yeah, that it is a struggle. We are in a struggle for our constitutional republic domestically. There is a worldwide struggle led by China and Russia, also Venezuela and Iran and North Korea to take out America. We got the globalists. We got the World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab. Hey, the problem is it's a target-rich environment. Any direction we shoot figuratively, we're going to hit something. So we just need to have a steel resolve to secure our counties. It's all about securing our counties in November so we can deliver an America First Congress. And I'm not being political. I'm just calling it like it is. And everybody, China, Russia, and Biden, they all fear the return of Donald J. Trump. That's what this is all about. So patriots, secure your county, the seven centers of gravity in your county, deliver a victory so that in January, America First, we have a new Speaker of the House, not McCarthy. We have a new leader of the Senate, Rick Scott, hopefully, and America First, and payback time for the horrible crimes that they've been committing against Americans. And, you know, between the rousting of a president, Mike Lindell, Steve Bannon, this is just the FBI is out of control. A total accounting of all the lawless behavior, and get us back on the road so that Donald J. Trump returns the office. That's what they are all fearful of. This is what they're just coming unglued about, is the possibility, which is very strong, of Donald J. Trump returning to office. And the more they act like this, the more likely it'll come true.
Yeah. Your new book is out, The Nation Will Follow, at thenationwillfollow.com, correct?
Yeah, it's out for pre-order, and it's full launch next Wednesday, so you'll have a full suite of availability on Amazon.com. Amazon will have the soft cover, the audio, and the Kindle, and the hard copy will be on thenationwillfollow.com, and you also get great discounts on book two coming out next fall, and also a discount on the audio version. But thank you, Brannon, and thank you, everyone. Things are going great, and this is my story inside of Spygate, doing something about it as a modern Whitaker Chambers to get in front of the Durham investigation, and then the plan of action at the county level for patriots to dominate their registrar, election board, county council, school board, judges, sheriffs, and prosecutors. We've had a huge battle in my own county, and I was part of the group that was able to get my former election registrar out of office, who's now indicted by Attorney General Meares of the Youngkin administration. Thank you, Youngkin, Winsome Sears, and Jason Meares. Great team, and boy, they are throwing blows, and they are, listen, these are felony actions. There's a high bar to achieve these. Felony indictments of my election registrar for fraud in November of 20, and I've already delivered a second round of surety bond claim of the current registrar and also with the Commissioner of Elections. Do their duty or be removed by having their surety bond moved. So,
excellent. By the way, let me ask you real quick before I let you go. If China and other bad actors can penetrate Twitter, can they use that, and they have, according to this report, how easy is it for them to also penetrate election offices around the country? And how easy is it to use Twitter to set algorithms and different things so that it puts, they can use Twitter as propaganda unfairly for pushing their agenda, or in other ways they could target voters with their message? So two questions there. If they can infiltrate Twitter, can they also penetrate our different election offices in our states and counties? And then again, can they use the position at Twitter to help swing the election their way, like it seems to have done at Facebook by making sure that they targeted people?
Yeah. This is and this goes as part of my sworn statements for both Arizona and Alabama. This is part of what I talked about when I was encumbering the seat at Department of Defense, and we scorecarded the cybersecurity state of the entire Department of Defense and intelligence community. Three simple factors explained 97% of the breaches: failure to use two-factor authentication, spear phishing and clicking on a link in an email, which exposed your entire environment to malware, and number three, the big one, the insider. When you're trying to penetrate a secure building installation, you always want an insider. That is your job one, is to get an insider. That is how the things are done. The Chinese intelligence operative is an insider. Who in the world is checking out and doing the checks of the seven or so election machine companies? Hey, CISA, Jen Easterly, where's the insider threat program to assure that these sacred companies don't have a foreign national intelligence operative inside their company? There is no program. They're just taking the word of the company. And here we go. We have foreign intelligence inside of Twitter. So yes, it is very likely. It is, again, you always want an insider to leave that door unlocked for you when you're trying to get into a secure facility. That's what an insider does. It makes your life so much easier when you want to get in and get out. Where is the validation that these election machine companies can absolutely say with very high assurance they don't have foreign intelligence operatives, or they're acting on behalf of foreign intelligence operatives? There is no program. There is no validation. There is no investigation by DHS CISA. This shows the absolute porous, untrusted nature of the election machine. And if they can get into Twitter, you bet they can get into an election machine company and plant their operatives.
Wow. Colonel John Mills, thenationwillfollow.com, thenationwillfollow.com. Thank you, Colonel Mills, for being with us tonight on the Lindell Report.
Thank you, Brandon. Always an honor to be with all of you patriots.
Thank you, John. And speaking of Lindell, we're going to get a surprise visit here from Mr. Lindell, who's been out on the road speaking tonight, keynote speaker at a big function. But I'm being told by the control room he is calling in to us unexpectedly, so he must have news. Mike, welcome to your own show.
Hey, everybody. Hello here. I'm here, Council Bluffs, Iowa. We're going on a huge event here. There's 10,000 people inside right now. This is it's a Flashpoint event, but you can watch it right here on Frank's Beach. We're going to be streaming it live here. I go on about 7 o'clock Central Time, but I wanted to get on here and tell you everybody the news. I met with lawyers today, including Alan Dershowitz, Kurt Olson, and Andrew Parker, and everybody. We are going to sue the United States government and the FBI on Tuesday morning, everybody. Unprecedented, and we're not going to let this happen to our country, where they weaponize the FBI to go after us. And you know, I figure we've got. I look back and I see all these moms and stuff that got their doors bashed in Colorado and around the country, and FBI and the FBI yesterday saying, well, we bashed her Sharona's door down because she didn't answer fast enough, and it was 42 seconds. And I'm going, oh, so when you FBI come knocking, you better make sure you answer your door in 40 seconds. Well, this is, they broke, according to lawyers, they broke my First Amendment rights, 4th, 5th, and 6th.
Wow.
I don't have the sheets in front of me, but I just want everybody here at Frank's Beach and Lindell TV to know this first. And but we're not going to go on the defense. This is the offense.
Actually, I know the
I've done nothing wrong other than you know, wanting to get these machines melted down and turned into prison bars. They're very afraid.
Well, I know your Fourth Amendment is the right to be secure in your persons, your papers, and your things. So, and the First Amendment, of course, is your freedom of speech. I got to go look up the Sixth Amendment. I don't know that one off the top of my head, but I got two out of three. But have you all, I don't know if you've, I'm sure you know this, right? But I, at 8:30 Central Time tonight here on Lindell TV, we have the first interview with Doug Frank. I suppose by now you heard what happened to Doug.
No, I have not. Did they go after him too?
Doug got off the airplane last night and was met by two FBI agents who took his phone.
Wow. Yeah, well, this is where we're at. This is a lawless society, and they're weaponizing the FBI. So, well, that'll be, hello, everybody. Hello. Yeah, thank you.
So that'll be 8:30 Central Time tonight. Doug Frank will give the first interview that he's given on this tonight.
Well, everybody, and we're going to have a lot of news coming up. I'm here. Everybody can watch this event. There's supposed to be there's 10,000 here, but millions of people are going to be watching, and it's going to be a good opportunity for me, Brandon, get the word out of the evidence of the. By the way, everybody, I want to tell everybody we have the DennisMontgomery.com website set up. The DennisMontgomery.com. Everybody can go there, see that he's very real, one of the smartest men I've ever met in my life, and probably in history. You can read all about him there. Click on Operation Checkmate and learn about why it's so important that judge in Nevada lifts the gag order on the data they don't want you to see, everybody. The government doesn't want you to see this. And, we can just pray that judge down there makes a decision to release it to the world and we get rid of these machines, get rid of lawfare in our country. And it would be well on our way to getting our freedoms back. And
absolutely. By the way, Mike, I looked up the Sixth Amendment, and there's various aspects of it, but this one here jumped out. A criminal defendant has the right to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusations against him. Therefore, it goes on from there. So I don't know which one they're going to use, but there's several in here related to the fact that Americans have the right. This one also has to do with right to a speedy trial, but there are more aspects of it. But one of them is you have the right to know what you're being accused of.
Yeah, well, that was the thing. I read the thing. It's like they just want my phone. You know, I said, well, I want to be arrested if you're taking my phone, and then they said they wouldn't allow me to call a lawyer until I really went kind of crazy. I was a little loud in the parking lot, and going, no, you're not getting my phone, and it was kind of a. I'll tell you, when they first boxed me in, like in a movie, I yelled, I said, who are you and what do you want? So loud enough so maybe with people would hear me in the parking lot. But I want to tell you guys I want everyone to think about this. Had this been dark out, okay, I've been around in some very bad places in my life and some very bad people with my past. I might have just took my truck and bashed through thinking that they're bad people. None of them had FBI written anywhere. They were all dressed like street people, all with just cars that you would think on the street. And anybody, if you're going to go after someone to do physically damage or whatever, you're probably going to say anything, right? Oh, yeah, I'm an FBI guy. Really? Well, is it normal to surround a guy in a Hardee's? When they could have just came to my office and said, hey, we have a thing here. We want to take your phone. Give me a break. Now, Dr. Doug Frank, did they go to his house together?
No, they met him as he got off an airplane. They were he said they were wearing suits. He said he got off the airplane and he went to the bathroom. And then when he came out of the bathroom, he says, I'm sure they were watching me. He says when he came out of the bathroom, they were standing right there. He said, I smiled at them. They smiled back. I knew who they were. They knew I knew who they were. And they said, we're here for your phone. Here's the warrant. We want your phone. He then proceeded to ask them if they knew what this was even about. And according to his conversation with me this afternoon, He said they didn't even know the case. And he said, so I took the opportunity to educate them on what it is I do. So he gave them a little seminar there in the airport.
Well, he sounds like me. I gave him an education on what I do. I even witnessed to the guys about Jesus when we talked about my book. And, the one guy's brother had read my book, and he goes, well, it really changed his life. And I said, because the guy tried to tell me, like, how can you go hunting? How can you have a gun? I'm going, what are you talking about? I said, haven't you read my book? You're the FBI. You're supposed to know these things.
Yeah, exactly. And well, you know what really disturbed me about the thing, too, is not only did you not know who they were, the unmarked cars, and, you know, when you have a public figure who has threats against their life, you know, on a routinely basis, some of them pretty violent at times, because this is very common today for public figures, to do that is so dangerous, because, again, it's dangerous.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's if it had been dark, you know, that's why I talked real loud, and I said, who are you? And I said, FBI. I said, I don't believe you. Let me see a badge. It even got down to when I said, you're not taking my phone, and they show me this warrant, and I said, how do I know that's real? I'm calling a lawyer. I don't know if you made this up. I don't trust. What do you think, just because you're the FBI, I'm supposed to believe you with all the things I've heard you guys have done to people that I know, bashing their doors in? I mean, this is just disgusting. You know?
Well, the other thing that disturbed me too, Mike, was that they ask you why you're flying around so much. I thought that was really...
Like none of your business, right?
Exactly. Why are you flying around so much? Well, yeah, that's right. That's almost like, again, kind of a Gestapo. Where are your papers? Let us see your papers. That's a question that shouldn't be asked. It's none of their business,
well,
nor should they ask that.
This is I've seen the movies from Nazi Germany. I mean, it was like a Gestapo thing. Like, who are you to tell me? I didn't do anything wrong. Don't
right.
come to me with garbage. Give me a break. And you think you can just come and take my phone with that? You know what? They did it to the wrong person. We're suing the FBI and the United States government.
Good for
you. We're not going to let, I don't want this to ever happen to anybody else. Again, this is, you know, anybody else might not have been able to handle this. My friend, it stressed him out. He hadn't been through anything like that. He's going, you know, like I'm going, these are bad guys. I mean, you know, this is just wrong.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. Well, let me bring a moment of levity to it. Logan, do you have the, is that Hardee's that tweeted that out, Logan? Logan, is that Hardee's that did that? You have it? Show it on the screen.
Hey, Brent, hey, yeah. They're calling me, but I wanted to say something so that it's on public record. We were going to go into a partnership with a couple of people with some products, and they've all backed out today because they're worried about the FBI.
Well, that's so, part of the reason they do this, is so people are afraid right. to communicate and talk with you.
That's right.
Okay, so final thing.
Help us out, these entrepreneurs. Use that promo code L77, Brandon. Get them on board. I've got to go in, everybody. We'll see you in a little while.
Sounds good, Mike. Thanks for checking in. Logan, show that Twitter. We'll try
What's
to.
Going on? We ready?
There we go. So this is actually Hardee's putting out. Now that you know we exist, you should really try our pillow biscuits. Well, there you go. Oh, wow. Okay, glad to get that report from Mike. We got to hurry because we still have three more guests to get in here. We're going to go to Bill Federer for a historical look at what they're doing to Mike Lindell, the historical analysis of why they would do this to someone like Mike Lindell. There is history here we need to understand. But first, Dan and Steve with Precinct Strategy. Guys, welcome to the broadcast. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Brandon. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. We're going to have to move really quick tonight because we weren't expecting that update. We still have another guest. Give us the latest update of you probably heard Colonel Mills tonight talk about people working in their county. He's got a new book out called The Nation Will Follow, and he's encouraging people to rescue their county. Very appropriate to have you guys on at the same time because you can help people do that, right?
Absolutely. The precinct strategy is the fundamental way to do it because everything that he talks about is influenced by precinct committeemen. So if you want to elect better, like a county superintendent of public instruction, what do you have to do? You have to get out the vote for the best candidate for that position. Who are the best people to get out the vote and help those kind of candidates? Precinct committeemen. So that's why we have to become precinct committeemen. When you become a precinct committeeman, you've got the ability to not only change the party from within, which is really, really important. I made a couple of slides earlier today, and I've had him on my podcast. But you also get to help get out the vote for the best candidate. So, you know, this is what we have in D.C. right now. We have a uniparty. Here's the Republicans. It's a Venn diagram, right? And here's the Democrats. And there's this overlap, and this is the uniparty.
Yep.
And this is what we have to have. We have to have a bigger, stronger Republican Party that's not associated with the Dems and make the Dems smaller to us, relative to us. And the way we do that, it's through the precinct committeeman strategy. Through the precinct committeeman strategy, we help elect the best candidate, conservative candidate, because we have a conservative platform, like, for example, Don Bolduc up in New Hampshire. He attributed his win to a precinct strategy or precinct level type strategy to help get out the vote in that all important primary. And from what I haven't looked at the numbers yet, but from what I've been told, what I heard on the news was that the turnout was relatively low despite everything that he did. But he boosted his turnout relative to the other candidate in the race, the favored candidate of the establishment, and he won. So that's where we've got to really, really get organized and united politically where we live in our political party.
Absolutely. Okay, Steve, what are your thoughts tonight?
Sure. Well, I think the most important thing that happened last week was General Flynn became a precinct committee man. Well, since he's done that in Florida and he's in Sarasota, he brought his wife along and he brought along 56 other people. So he's taken over the Sarasota party because they were rhinos over there and they got him in, and he's doing a terrific job at getting people involved. And what do people do? They attend meetings, they sign up voters, they canvass neighborhoods. They do poll watching and poll working. And these are some of the things that we need you to get to do. So Dan and I work very closely together. And if you want to get involved, just kind of call me at 954-318-6902 or go to sstern1054@aol.com so that you can get involved, because we have pill.net where you can go on Dan's site. You can get involved there. But if you need more information, give me a call. So we work together in doing this, and we got a lot of success stories going on there. One of the things that have happened also last week and the week before, Turning Point USA Action, getting 400,000 people involved. There's a big, big, big area where we can really get people involved, because they're the young people. Dan and I are, you know, a little bit older, and we need some of these young people to get involved. And we need to mentor them to let them know how, what, and what they got to do. I mean, it's not easy because, you know, a lot of the people that are in the committees want to control it. And that's some of the things that Dan and I are trying to, you know, work on. We have a lot of people that are rhinos and establishing people. And, you know, we're talking about General Bolduc. They spent $6 million to try to get him out of the race. Whew. So we have our own Republicans fighting, you know, Sununu and McConnell all spent that money to try to get him. But he did a terrific job. You know, he went from a enlisted man all the way to general. He has many, many decorations. Terrific guy. And we got a guy in Vermont, the same thing. He's a major. His name is Gerald Malloy. And he also won. And so we got two states there that we got to really protect our senators. These guys are both running for the Senate of the United States. We got to get them in because, you know, everybody's concentrating on the House. And we got to really rock and roll for the senators. So we got a lot of senators out there, and we're going to work to try to get them in. So some of the success stories we had, David Penn in Minnesota, in Mike's hometown, he's doing a terrific job. He's taking over the party. He's getting people involved. Every Saturday he has meetings. I mean, he's working around the clock. He's giving up a lot of his time for his business. And, you know, that's what we do. You know, we have a great business here with the flag shirt, but I spend half of my time every day just calling people, getting them involved, and working for a lot of candidates, as you see in the back, the Governor DeSantis, one of our great candidates. And so we have a terrific time. Now, one of the most important things, each week we have a Zoom meeting, Save My Freedom, and we get people from all around the country together, letting them know what's happening in each counties. And I think Dan can give you some more information. He's got a lot of stuff to come on. Dan, you want to give him some more information on how they can get involved?
Yeah, thank you, Steve. I just wanted to mention that, you know, the place to start is my site, precinctstrategy.com. Precinctstrategy.com. And there's three buttons there. So click on each of the three buttons. One is a promo video that explains the strategy. Second one takes you to a sign-up page for the communications and collaboration platform that Robert Beadleton's built for it. You can also order my book. Thanks for holding up my book there, Steve. I appreciate it. And then last but not least, very important, get the Votify Now voter empowering election integrity reporting app. Votify Now. There's a button for Votify Now. I see the three buttons there on the screen. It'll take you right to the site, votifynow.org. And then I tell everybody moving forward to do three things. One of them is get Votify Now. The other thing is vote on election day. Wait and vote on election day so that they can't rejigger these machines. They won't know how many people are going to vote until election day. Vote on election day, if at all possible. Check out your Secretary of State website or your county elections department website. And then become a poll worker if you can, part-time or full-time. And I've got a link to saveyourrepublic.org on my site, saveyourrepublic.org. I just found about this site by chance on Twitter. It's terrific. They've got it for every county. You get to the site, there's a map of the U.S., you click on your state, you drill down to your county, and there will be the information on how to sign up to be a poll worker. We never have enough Republicans. We got to have more. And so do your civic duty. Do something more than just voting. That's how we're going to save the republic, through us all participating in party politics to the maximum extent possible that you can based on your circumstances. We don't have enough people. There's 400,000 of these precinct committeeman slots in our party, and only about 200,000 are filled. We've got to fill up the other 200,000 so we turn our party from a half-strength, ideologically split party into a full-strength, solidly America First Party. And that's the goal of the precinct strategy.
Absolutely. Precinctstrategy.com, precinctstrategy.com. Dan and Steve, thank you guys so much. Appreciate your being with us and all you guys are doing. Thank you, guys.
Thanks,
all right.
Man. Take care.
Thank you. Joining me now is Bill Federer. Bill is a historian. He also ran for U.S. Congress against Dick Gephardt. I think he actually won that election, but lost it due to massive voter fraud. Really? Don't say. Indeed, he did. And so Bill knows what he's talking about, but he is a author and a historian. I asked Bill on tonight because I said, Bill, can you give us some historical background as to why the cultural Marxists are doing what they're doing to people like Mike Lindell? Is there historical lessons here we need to learn from? Bill Federer of the AmericanMinute.com, AmericanMinute.com. Welcome back, Bill.
Hey, great to be with you, Brandon.
It is AmericanMinute.com, right?
Correct, AmericanMinute.com. And one of my latest books is Socialism, the Real History from Plato to the Present. And the subtitle is How the Deep State Capitalizes on Crises to Consolidate Control. And one of the chapters in there talks about psychological projection. And it's a tactic where they blame you of exactly what they're guilty of. And if you like, I can explain that a little bit.
Yeah, let's do that. And I also want to get to the steps you've given that, I think it was in Rome or wherever it was, you tell me, where they were purging the military and this and that. And you were reading these off last week on my show, and I was like, whoa, all of that's happening now.
Right. So Sigmund Freud coined the term psychological projection, and it's where rude people deny in themselves a negative quality but attribute that quality to somebody else. And so it's called blame shifting, where the attacker blames the victim. Narcissists do this. Little kids, I didn't start the fight, you did. A cheating spouse will accuse the faithful spouse of being unfaithful, right? They project this in, sort of like Jesse Smollett stages an attack against himself so that it can be blamed on people that he doesn't like politically. And David Axelrod was Obama's campaign manager, and on NPR Radio, April 19th, 2010, he said, in Chicago, there was an old tradition of throwing a brick through your own campaign office window and then calling a press conference to say you've been attacked, right? So you throw the brick and then you accuse your opponent and they have to go on the defensive. They get smeared with the accusation in the media. Sort of like, you know, there was a kidnapping plot that the FBI planned for Governor Whitmer, and they got a bunch of low IQ guys to go out and have beers, and they even gave them some marijuana to try to frame them to make it look like they were doing it. And so this is something where corrupt politicians accuse innocent politicians of being corrupt. Remember Nancy Pelosi in her, she said it's a diversionary tactic. You demonize your opponent with the wrap-up smear. You smear somebody with falsehoods, and then it's reported in the press. Sort of like Harry Reid said, yeah, I lied about Romney not paying his taxes, but it worked. He's not elected. And so so this has gotten into politics where, let's say there's a candidate running for president who's colluding with Russia, giving away a fifth of U.S. uranium to Russia in exchange for a $145 million contribution to her Clinton Foundation. Well, when she's finally caught, all she has to do is pay $113,000 fine to the FEC. So here she was, guilty of colluding with Russia, but she and the FBI are involved in creating a Steele dossier to accuse her opponent of colluding with Russia, right? So they accuse, let's say there's another candidate that's extorting Ukraine, even on C-SPAN, saying, stop investigating my son or I'm going to hold back billions in USA. You want to accuse the opponent of extorting Ukraine. You accuse them of the exact crime. Their name gets smeared with it in the media. You put them through mock impeachment type trials. If the finger ever gets pointed back at the guilty candidate, by that time, the water's muddied. The public's already made their mental associations and decisions, and you never get a second chance to make a first impression. And so this has gotten into politics so much that you could actually have a president giving a speech blaming his opponents for exactly what he's guilty of, right? So they'll accuse, they want to destroy democracy when the actual person giving the speech is the one, one wanting to destroy it. And so this is biblical. Potiphar's wife was lusting after Joseph, yet she had the audacity to accuse him of being the lustful one trying to rape her. You had Ahab confronting the king Elijah, and he says, oh, you're the troubler of Israel. And Elijah says, no, you're the one troubling Israel. And the Pharisees started a riot with the apostle Paul in the temple. And then there was a trial, and they accused Paul of starting the riot. When Paul says, look, ask anybody, I wasn't disputing at all. So the idea is they do the insurrection, but they blame you for it. And Nero set fire to Rome, blamed it on the innocent Christians. And so this projection is used politically. And so Plato in the 380 BC in his book of Republic, he says that tyrants have two tools in their toolbox, basically, fraud and force. Fraud is they'll take away the rights of the people under the guise of doing it for their own benefit. And as long as the people believe the fraud, they'll let go of the rights. But when people begin to see through the fraud, that's when the leader has a choice. Give up his power, which he's not inclined to do because Plato called him a lover of power, or get rid of the people confronting him. And so he does a purge of his administrations and military of anybody with virtue. And all he has left is law enforcement that are yes men that will carry out his agenda. And he finally stands up in the chariot of state holding the reins of power, and he's revealed as a tyrant. And so this is what you begin to see all tyrants do. They use fraud, but when the fraud is no longer effective, they just flat out come out of the closet and they use force. And, you know, Constitution Day is coming up September 17th. And when you understand that the whole world has been ruled by kings and pharaohs and Caesars and Kaisers, and America was an attempt to break away from a king and take the power and split it into three branches and split it federal to state level and then tie it up with 10 handcuffs we call the first 10 amendments. All the Constitution is to prevent a president from ruling through mandates and executive orders and weaponizing law enforcement to go after his political opponents.
So let me ask you this,
that's what the King
Bill,
of England did.
So let me ask you this. What do you see in history when it comes to attacking leaders? I mean, obviously, psychological projection is one of them. But when you're going after Donald Trump, you're going after Michael Flynn, you're going after Mike Lindell, you go after Steve Bannon, you go after Peter Navarro, you go after, and the list just keeps going and going. You go after all the attorneys around Donald Trump that were trying to investigate a fraud. I mean, that's another one. They're accusing them of breaking the law by trying to look into fraud when they were the ones that the government, the deep state, the Marxists, are the ones now in government created the fraud. But they're blaming the ones who are looking into the fraud, exposing the fraud of being the ones that broke the law. So it's exactly what's happening. But historically, attacking leaders that have courage and conviction, so that people won't follow them, so people are afraid of them. I don't know if you heard Mike tonight say there are some people that he was going to do business with, and now they're afraid to do business with him. Do we have any historical analysis of how this has been done in other times?
Yeah, it's Saul Alinsky said ridicule is the most powerful weapon. You take a target. You don't attack a movement. You attack an individual who represents the movement, and you destroy them. And everybody backs away from them and from everything they stand for. We saw a version of this with Sarah Palin. Here is a wonderful, godly governor of Alaska, and the left just mercilessly ridiculed her and made her such a pariah that everybody wanted to back away from her and from everything she stood for. And it's a tactic used effectively. You know, I wanted to mention a few others that might be of interest. So 1934, Stalin was facing a growing anti-Stalinist movement. And at the same time, he had a supporter named Sergei Kirov, the party boss of Leningrad. And Stalin had an idea. He would assassinate his own friend, Sergei Kirov, and eliminate a potential rival and blame the assassination on the innocent anti-Stalinists. Nobody would suspect that he did it because he and Sergei Kirov were friends, and everybody would believe the anti-Stalinists did it because they didn't like Stalin and they didn't like Sergei. Stalin uses as an excuse to have committees, to have hearings, to bring in people for questioning, to detain them, to arrest them, and to kill over 1 million people in the first Great Purge of 1936 to 38. And then we look at Germany. It was a republic, the Weimar Republic, and somebody started a party called the National Socialist Workers' Party, or Nazi, and the head of it was Hitler. And the party had an under-the-table armed, violent arm to it, sort of like a BLM Antifa group. They were called Brown Shirts or Sturmabteilung, Stormtroopers. And they would go into the meetings of Hitler's opponents and disrupt the meeting. And then they would lock arms in public and block access to buildings and streets. And then in the night of broken glass, they went into the cities and rioted and smashed windows and set on fire and looted over 7,000 stores owned by Jews. And very similar to what we saw in 66 cities across America, right? Portland, Seattle, where all these BLM Antifa people are destroying. And did I mention their capital got attacked? The burning of the Reichstag?
Wow.
And evidence points to Hitler's own people setting the fire.
That's right.
But Hitler decided he was going to have hearings and committees to do investigations, to do questioning, to detain people, to arrest people, and have them shot without a trial. And when the dust settled, Hitler didn't have many political opponents left.
Wow. How about purging the military?
Yeah. So in Turkey, when Ataturk set it up way back in the 1920s, he put the military in charge of making sure the politics never got fundamental Muslim again. And so they would do their job. Well, what happened? Erdogan was facing a growing anti-Erdogan movement, and the military didn't like him. And so he was anticipating the military coming and arresting him because he was getting fundamentalist again. So Erdogan got an airplane, flew in a circle, landed, and claimed there was a coup against him. And he pulls out a list of all of his political opponents. And he decides to have hearings and have committees to do questioning, to detain people, to arrest people, and to zip tie them and take away 30,000 people, and they've not been seen since.
Wow.
And there are no one vocal opponents of Erdogan anymore. Ah, how do you like that? And so this is what tyrants do. They stage an attack, an insurrection. They stage an attack against themselves and their party, and then they go after their political opponents.
So let me ask you before we run out of time, because I'm hearing about, you know, obviously we've been reporting now for a couple of months, the PSA is running in New York what to do if there's a nuclear attack. We have in Denver, they're passing out go bags. I played the video last night. Passing out go bags is a goofy go bag with a roll of toilet paper, paper towels, and some cotton balls. And I'm all for people being prepared and having a go bag. That's not a problem. Is when has the left been interested in people actually being prepared for real threats? And if you actually prepare for one or talk about it, you're crazy, right? You're a kook, they claim. But all of a sudden now, when we've been the ones warning about nuclear attack, the real threats from a nuclear exchange with the former Soviet Union or with Iran or North Korea, now the left wants to talk about this and run PSAs. I have to wonder if with Biden's speech about MAGA people are a threat. They're a clear and present danger. They don't like the Constitution. They're lawless. They don't honor the law. The narrative seems to be being laid, I believe, of doing exactly what you're talking. Some kind of event, then using it to blame the political opposition and round them up. That's, I mean, if they were going to do something, and I'm not saying they are, but they sure are laying the narrative. You have to admit they're laying the narrative.
Oh, right, right. And so, again, they blame you of what they're guilty of. They're racist. They accuse you of being racist, right? I mean, Christianity hates racism, right? I'm a Christian. I hate racism. Racism is anti-Bible. God made everybody. God loves everybody.
There's only one race, the human race. One race, the human race. Or different people groups, but one race, the human race. And those of us that study the Bible know that those different people groups came from the Tower of Babel, and God confused their language, and they broke up, and genetics just kicked in.
Right. And so they're the racists, but they want to accuse us of being racist. They're the hateful ones. They want to accuse us. So this strategy is used over and over again. I want to quote from Senator Marco Rubio. Last month, right after the Mar-a-Lago raid. And he was on Fox News. And Marco Rubio said, this is shocking, but in Latin America and in many other countries around the world, here is what happens. A group takes power. One of the first things they do is they begin to persecute and go after their political opponents. When the supporters of their political opponents begin to complain, they begin to target and criminalize opposition. Hmm. The next thing you're going to see, and it's because it's in their playbook, is they're going to go after the supporters of Donald Trump or just conservatives, going to begin to get labeled as potential insurrectionists and harassed by law enforcement.
I.e. Mike Lindell.
Right. And so here he's saying it's in the playbook. So what they do is they go after the former leader. And so this is what every third world country does. I mean, it's actually in the Bible, right? You would get a wicked king and he would go after all the former king's family and wipe them out, and all the former king's supporters and wipe them out. Right. When King Charles was restored to the throne of England, he went after all the Puritans and Oliver Cromwell and all those people and wiped them out. This is the norm. America has been a departure from this, where we've been able to transition from power without killing former leaders. You know, Pancho Villa was part of, you know, a work fighting against corrupt leaders in Mexico. But then he retires from politics and he goes back to his farm. Well, one of the next corrupt leaders sent somebody to the farm to assassinate him. So whenever you see an administration going after the former administration and former supporters, that means we're no longer a democratically elected republic. We're descending into chaos. And so why is the military so important? They have to purge the military. They have to get out of the military anybody that has morals and values. Wow. All they want is yes men. And so one story in Rome lost some battles with Persia, and Diocletian was the emperor, and he asked the generals why. And they said, well, you've neglected the Roman gods. And so he orders all the military to worship the Roman gods. Well, this is 3rd century AD. Lots of Christians, they can't. They're purged. Once the Christians are out of the Roman military, Diocletian decides to use the military to force the entire Roman Empire to return to worshiping the Roman gods.
Sound familiar, folks?
Worst persecution.
Yep,
yes.
Sound familiar? They're purging the military right now. AmericanMinute.com. Hold up the book again there, Bill. AmericanMinute.com. You'll find it. What's the title of the book?
Socialism, the Real History from Plato to the Present.
You'll find it. It's pretty thick. How many pages is that?
300.
300 pages, AmericanMinute.com, AmericanMinute.com. Thanks for being with us, Bill.
Thank you, Brandon.
Big show tonight, breaking news, exclusive. First interview with Dr. Doug Frank tonight on the FBI seizing his phone yesterday at the airport. That starts live, 7:30 p.m. Central Time. Now here's my Worldview Report. I'm Brandon House, in for Mike Lindell, who broke news tonight right here, Tuesday. He's suing the FBI. He's suing the federal government for what they did to him just the other day. Thanks for watching. Take care.
You're watching Lindell TV.